All right, so get this, everyone. We're going deep on a case today that shows landscaping, well, it's not always as peaceful as you think. We're talking property lines, like where does yours end and your neighbor's begin?
Right.
Unspoken agreements, those things where you kind of assume everything's cool, and a whole legal battle that went all the way up to a California Court of Appeal.
Yeah, it's a fascinating case, that's for sure. Richardson v. Frank, it's called. It really shows you how something that seems like an everyday neighbor thing can turn into, you know, a really complicated legal mess.
Like, whether you're studying for that property law exam or you just love a good legal story, I think you'll find this one has a lot to teach us.
Oh, absolutely.
It's all about irrevocable licenses, these informal agreements that can become, well, legally binding, especially when it comes to property.
Exactly.
Right? And the story, we'll get this, it hinges on a 150-foot driveway, over 20 years of landscaping, and a landowner who just, well, kept quiet.
It all started back in 1989 with a couple, the Poxes, building a house in Novato, California. And their driveway, it crossed an easement on their neighbor's land. Pretty standard stuff. You see that a lot.
Right, right.
But the thing is, this easement, it was specifically for access and utilities. So you're thinking driveway, yeah, utility lines, that kind of thing. The essentials.
Okay, so basic stuff. The bare minimum to get in and out and have your power and water and all that.
Right.
But I'm guessing the Poxes didn't exactly stop at, like, a few potted plants or something.
Well, they got a little creative, you could say that. Later. We're not talking just a couple of plants here. It was full-on landscaping, irrigation, even lighting. They basically took that easement and made it, like, an extension of their yard.
Wow. So they went all out, huh?
They did.
And for years, it seemed like nobody really cared, right? New neighbors came along, the Franks. Bought the property in 2004, and for a good 6 years, everyone was just, like, peacefully coexisting.
Yeah, that's right, until 2010.
Okay, here we go. What happened in 2010?
Well, that's when things took a turn. Greg Franks, one of the new neighbors, he decided, you know what? I'm cutting off the irrigation and the electrical lines. The ones running through that, you know, all that beautiful landscaping on the easement.
Oh, so he just went for it, huh? Cut them off.
Yeah.
Now, the Richardsons, they'd bought the Poxes' property by this point. And they were not happy about this, like, at
right.
all. So what did they do? They took the Franks to court.
Exactly.
But wait, hold on a second. If the Franks were so bothered by all that landscaping, why did they say anything sooner? I mean, 6 years is a long time to just let it go, isn't it?
You would think, right. And that's where it gets interesting. See, the Richardsons, they argued that they had something called an irrevocable license to use that easement for their landscaping. Even though, and this is the kicker, it wasn't part of the original agreement for the easement.
Well, hold on. Okay, even I know that sounds a little off.
Right.
So both the trial court and the appeals court, they sided with the Richardsons.
They did.
Okay. Now, I may not be a legal expert or anything, but how can you have a license for something that wasn't, like, in the original deal?
Yeah.
And, you know, while we're at it, what even is the difference between an easement and a license? I need some legal 101 here.
Yeah, you've hit on a super important point. An easement, like the one for the driveway, that's an actual property, right? It means you've got the legal okay to use someone else's land for that specific purpose.
Got it.
A license, though, that's more like, you know, permission, being allowed to do something. It's not as strong as an easement. And usually someone can just revoke it, take it back.
So, like, hey, you can borrow my lawnmower, but I might need it back next week kind of thing.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. But if a license can just be revoked like that, how did the Richardsons win? What made their license irrevocable, like unrevocable?
Well, to figure that out, California courts, they use a three-part test to decide if a license is irrevocable.
Oh, a three-part test.
And this test, it comes from an older case, Cook v. Ramponi, back in 1952. But it basically boils down to permission, reliance, and expenditures.
Okay, let me write that down. Permission, reliance, expenditures. Three things to keep in mind.
Right.
So, when we're talking about permission, what exactly do we mean? What kind of permission are we looking for?
Well, the first part of the test, it's all about figuring out if the landowner gave permission. And this permission could be, you know, directly given, like, hey, you can totally landscape my easement. Or, and this is important, it can be implied through their actions, like what they did or didn't do.
So, like, actions speak louder than words kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And in this case, the fact that the Franks didn't say anything for 6 years, the court saw that as a form of consent, like they were okay with it.
So, legally speaking, keeping your mouth shut can sometimes mean you're saying yes.
In property law, it often can. It's called tacit consent.
Tacit consent. Interesting.
And it basically means that by not objecting to the landscaping for all those years, the Franks, without even realizing it, they might have given the Richardsons, and before them the Pocces, permission to keep using the easement for their landscaping.
Whoa. So just by not saying, hey, I don't like all these flowers and sprinklers on my easement, the Franks kind of shot themselves in the foot, huh?
Yeah, well, that's one way to put it.
So what about the second part of the test, reliance? How does that factor into all of this?
Right. So reliance is about whether the licensee, the Richardsons in this case, they reasonably relied on that continued use of the land, you know, the landscaping and all that.
Okay, I see. So because they put time and effort into maintaining the landscaping, the court said, yeah, it makes sense that they'd rely on things staying the same.
Exactly. They invested resources, and they wouldn't have done that if they didn't think they had, you know, the okay to do it. And then we get to that last part of the test. Expenditures.
Right. Expenditures. So like money spent.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Did the licensee, did they shell out a decent chunk of change on improvements? And did the landowner, did they know about it?
And so it's not just enough to have permission and to, you know, rely on it. You got to actually put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. In this case, the court, they figured, yeah, the landscaping, irrigation, all that lighting, that probably cost the Richardsons a good bit of money. And of course, the Pocces before them, too.
Right, right.
And it's money they wouldn't have spent if they thought, oh, we can't landscape this easement.
Well, makes sense.
And the Franks, well, they lived on the property for 6 years, so they definitely knew about all the landscaping that was going on.
Okay, so let me make sure I'm getting this straight. Even though the easement, the actual agreement, it didn't say anything about landscaping, the court basically said, well, you let it happen for so long, you kind of gave up your right to complain now.
Yeah.
That's kind of wild, isn't it?
Yeah. It really shows you how property law is not just about what's written down, black and white. It's about how people act, too. What's reasonable.
Mm.
In this case, the court, they figured, hey, it wouldn't be fair to the Richardsons to suddenly say, nope, no more landscaping after they'd spent so much on it. You know, all based on the Franks not saying anything for years.
This whole tacit consent thing, it's really fascinating.
Yeah.
I bet it comes up in way more situations than just landscaping.
Oh, for sure. Imagine this. You've got a neighbor who's been parking your car, like, on the edge of your property for years.
Okay, yeah, I can see that happening.
You see him doing it. Maybe you even, like, wave to them, but you've never actually said, hey, you can park there.
So are you saying that just because I haven't yelled at them to move their car, I could be like accidentally giving them the legal right to park there? That's crazy.
Well, that's the point Richardson v. Franks is making. You got to be on top of things when it comes to your property rights.
Right, right.
Don't just assume everything's cool because no one's complaining. Like, if you don't want your neighbor parking there or building a shed that's a little too close or even planting a tree with branches hanging over your fence, you got to say something.
So like a friendly, hey, no problem with you parking there for now, but I might need the space back later. That could save a lot of trouble down the road.
Exactly. Just talking things out, being clear, it can prevent those little misunderstandings from turning into huge legal headaches. Just a simple conversation, or even better, something in writing, you know, an agreement that can really make things clear for everyone.
Definitely. Now, what about the other side of this? Let's say I'm the Richardsons in this situation. I'm relying on my neighbor, you know, just kind of assuming they're okay with me doing something on their property. Does this case mean I got to run to a lawyer and get a contract every time I want to, like, borrow a cup of sugar from my neighbor?
Well, you got to balance, you know, being practical with being careful, legally speaking.
Right.
I mean, we don't need a contract for every little thing we do with our neighbors.
True, true.
But what Richardson v. Franks really shows us is that, especially for bigger things or things that'll last a while, having something written down, it can save you a lot of stress and legal fees.
Yeah, if you're going to spend time and money on something, better safe than sorry.
Exactly.
So even though the Richardsons, they ended up winning their case, I'm guessing it wasn't all smooth sailing. All those legal back and forth, that can get pretty expensive and stressful too, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely. Going to court, it should always be the last resort.
Right?
Even if you've got a strong case, it takes a lot of time, it costs money, and it can really mess up relationships.
For sure.
So whenever you can, try to work things out just by talking, you know, being open and finding a compromise.
It's like they say, sometimes the best legal strategy is just using common sense and being a good neighbor.
I couldn't agree more. And with that in mind, maybe we can switch gears a bit and talk about, you know, some practical things our listeners can do to avoid finding themselves in a situation like the Richardsons or the Franks.
Okay, so we've talked about this whole tacit consent thing,
yeah.
being clear about what we're okay with and getting things in writing when it makes sense. But what about like actual steps people can take, you know, to protect themselves when it comes to their property?
Well, the first thing, and it might sound obvious, is knowing your property lines, like where your land ends and your neighbor's starts. You'd be surprised how many people are kind of fuzzy on that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Got to know your boundaries, right?
Exactly. And a survey, that can be a really good investment, especially if you're thinking about, you know, doing some landscaping, building something, any project that's close to your property line.
Okay, knowing your boundaries.
Yeah.
Check. What else?
Don't be afraid to have those, you know, maybe slightly awkward conversations with your neighbors. Like if you see something that's making you go, is that right? Address it sooner rather than later.
Yeah, don't wait till it becomes a big problem, right?
Right. Remember, silence. It can be seen as consent in the eyes of the law. So a simple, hey, I noticed your fence seems to be like a few inches over the property line. Maybe we could chat about that. That can save you a lot of hassle in the long run.
Nip it in the bud before it turns into a legal battle.
Right, exactly. And speaking of legal battles, if you're thinking about doing anything that could affect your neighbor's property, or if they're planning something that might affect you, talk to a lawyer. They can help you figure out, you know, what are your rights? What are you supposed to do? And they can even help you write up an agreement that protects everyone.
It's like that saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Exactly. And it's not about being like suspicious or wanting to sue everyone. It's about being smart, protecting what's yours, and keeping things good with your neighbors.
So basically, know your property lines, talk things out clearly, and don't be shy about getting legal advice when you need it.
Perfect summary. And remember, Richardson v. Frank, it shows us that property law, it can be tricky. Something that seems like a simple agreement between neighbors, well, it can have some serious legal consequences.
It's definitely been an eye-opener for me. Makes you realize property law isn't just for lawyers or people with tons of real estate. It's something that affects everyone.
Right. Absolutely. It's about our homes, our communities, how we get along with the people around us.
Well, I think we've really dug into this case and what it all means. Hopefully everyone listening now has a better understanding of these irrevocable licenses, what tacit consent is, and why it's so important to be proactive when it comes to your property.
I agree. And if anything we've talked about today has made you think about, you know, similar situations in your own life, I'd say do some more research, maybe chat with a lawyer, and most importantly, talk to your neighbors.
Great advice. And with that, we'll wrap up our deep dive into the world of property law. Thanks for joining us, everyone.